Welcome to WGIL's Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Jay Redfern.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to work for the CIA? My guest today is Galesburg native Mike Tatey, who retired from the Central Intelligence Agency in 2019 after 30 years of federal government service, including 29 at CIA. A 1981 Galesburg High School graduate, Mike served in many assignments at CIA, including as a manager and supervisor in such areas as auditing, inspections, support, public affairs, education, and analysis. He traveled to nearly three dozen countries for work. Citing Mike's honors would take the better part of our time today, but he's a Career Intelligence Medal recipient, having earned 27 Exceptional Performance Awards and three Meritorious Unit Citations. Mike Tatey joins me today to talk about his nearly three decades of service with CIA, including his years of growing up in Galesburg and how that helped him set him on a path for such a fascinating career. Mike, welcome to Galesburg Live.
Great. Thank you very much, Jay. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I've wanted to do this interview for a long time. So full disclosure, Mike and I were not only classmates at GHS, but we're good friends and remained in regular touch since he left Galesburg in 1981. That seems like a long time ago, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. So Mike joins me today from his now home in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. That sounds like a pretty cool place. I think the only reason Mike's available today is because I think the golf course is closed there. Is that right, Mike?
That's correct, Jay. Yeah, our golf course is hosting a charity fundraiser, and I try to play golf on a daily basis. So it's become one of my pastimes and something I really enjoy, and my wife also enjoys. So
that's cool.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. So for the record, Mike attained top secret U.S. government clearance and remains bound by some guidelines by the CIA, so we won't ask him too many personal questions or too many work questions. So first of all, Mike, tell us a little bit about the CIA. What does it do, and how does it differ from the FBI?
Sure. So the CIA serves as our country's first line of defense, and we have three main objectives. The first one is to collect foreign intelligence. The second one is to produce objective analysis. And the third one is to conduct covert action as directed by the president. It's important to note that the CIA does not make policy or policy recommendations. Instead, the agency serves as an independent source of information for those people who do, including the president and his senior advisors. The CIA also does not function as a law enforcement organization, but the CIA does work with the intelligence community, the military, law enforcement agencies, et cetera, on many complex issues ranging from counterintelligence to counterterrorism. So the FBI is more of a law enforcement organization. It's also interesting enough that the CIA and FBI are both members of the U.S. intelligence community, and there's just over a dozen organizations that are part of the intelligence community. The CIA does not have, as I mentioned, law enforcement responsibility. And the FBI, if you think about it, they collect intelligence more on domestically within the United States, whereas the CIA, as I mentioned, collects foreign intelligence. So I think those are the main differences.
Do you find that people get that mixed up, I mean, or get confused a little bit between the CIA and FBI?
I think they do, especially a lot of people that don't live in that Washington, D.C. area. Sometimes we'll try to lump the two together, but they're completely separate organizations, which is by necessity and by law. So it's important to note those distinctions.
Okay. So how does a proud graduate of Costa Catholic School and Galesburg High School end up in the CIA? I'm sure it's not as easy as applying to an ad in the newspaper, or is it?
Well, in my case, actually, it was.
Uh-huh.
I was living and working in St. Louis. I had been there for about 5 years and worked as an auditor for a public accounting firm and also worked as an auditor in a bank. And one day I was looking through the local newspaper, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and there was an advertisement from the CIA. They were hiring and they were looking for people for various occupations, and one of them was auditor, and that was my background. And so a recruiter happened to be coming through St. Louis, so I applied through that advertisement and went to an interview and got through that first round, and then went through multiple rounds of interviews in the Washington, D.C. area, and then also went through several other processes, including a polygraph, medical exam, and the background investigation. So back then, the Internet was not used, was not prevalent. So whereas today, a lot more people would just apply to the CIA's website if they wanted to work there. So it's there are many ways that you can actually go to work there. But in my case, it was actually as easy as applying to an ad in a newspaper.
So I'm sure, you know, like any big business, I'm not sure necessarily the CIA is a business, but they have all kind of jobs. And, you know, people think of CIA, they think of intelligence agents. So, I mean, there's just not how many jobs, but there's just a huge amount of different kind of jobs that make up the CIA.
That's correct. I mean, you think of there are so many different occupations within the agency. You know, we have people that work in the medical field. We have doctors, nurses. We have people that are experts in different languages. We have people that are experts in technology, people that were experts in different aspects of the support world, including budget, finance, procurement, logistics, security, information technology, you name it. There's probably a role that somebody there has for that. And that was one of the things that really appealed to me was a variety of types of jobs that could be that I could do when I was there. And I tried to take full advantage of that. I had many different roles, if you will, in my time there. I started out as an auditor and did that for about 5 years, then worked in what's called the current intelligence world. And following that, I was on an assignment at the Pentagon where I served as liaison officer there. I also worked in the media relations, public affairs area at CIA. And that's where I was serving as a speechwriter for the directors of the CIA for about a year. And also was a media spokesperson. So did a lot of work with the media back then. And then another big part of my career was serving as a support officer and coordinating all those different aspects of support that would enable our mission. And then one of the other jobs I had there was as a teacher. We have a lot of training that is done at the agency, and with my business background, I ended up teaching quite a few business courses to agency officers. So it was quite diverse, the number of occupations that the agency has. We had some people there who specialized in certain areas for their entire career, and you kind of need those people with that deep expertise. But I think it also was helpful to have people with kind of a broader exposure to different areas to try to tie all those areas together. So that was kind of more of my focus.
Okay. So what's it like to walk into the CIA headquarters on day one?
Well, it was very exciting. I still kind of get goosebumps thinking that I actually served there for as long as I did. It was quite unique, you know, walking across into the agency headquarters, walking across the agency field that's been featured in so many TV shows and movies. But it was also very humbling knowing that you're an important one important part of serving the United States first line of defense. So it was always something I remembered every day when I came to work, that it was an honor, it was a privilege to serve there. And I always realized what a privilege it was, and something that always was at the forefront of my mind.
Okay. Can you kind of broadly say, what does an auditor do?
Sure. I mean, an auditor, in many cases, is looking at, especially in the commercial world, is looking at financial compliance, making sure that companies are abiding by the rules and regulations that are set forth. It was really wasn't a whole lot different within the CIA. We were making sure that money was being spent the way it was intended to be, the way Congress had directed it to be. We also did compliance audits. We did different types of performance audits. And you were basically, you know, looking at different financial records, talking to people, and ensuring that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing.
Okay. We're talking today to Mike Tatey, a 1981 Galesburg High School graduate and nearly 30-year employee with the Central Intelligence Agency. So one of your roles at CIA was as the chief of the CIA Operations Center, where you led a team that provided 24/7 alert and warning intelligence to the director of the CIA and support to the president's daily brief staff. Can you kind of talked about this before some of your roles, but I mean, how did that role, how did you attain that role, and what are some of the other roles that you had during your time there?
Sure. So my first role in CIA's Operations Center was as one of the representatives who prepared the morning read book for the director of the agency. And in order to do that, I had to arrive at about 2:30 in the morning and go through all the overnight intelligence reporting and put together a two-page summary that was based on what the director wanted and needed for that day. And then after a couple more assignments as what they call a senior duty officer, where I was in charge of a group of officers during a particular shift of work, a 12-hour shift. And then a few years later, I was asked to apply for the deputy chief of the operations center. And then within a year, the guy that was the chief there left, and I had to apply, but I was selected to serve as the chief of that organization. So that was probably one of the more interesting roles that I had there. I mentioned my role in the Office of Public Affairs. That was a new experience for me, working with the media. And that's the office I was working in when the terrorist attacks occurred on September 11th, 2001.
So you had your hands full then?
had our hands full that day. It was quite emotional, quite moving. And on my commute home, I actually drove by the Pentagon, and that was where a plane had crashed in and killed numerous people. And you could still see the smoke rising from where that plane had hit the Pentagon. Always, as I get back to what I said before, y'all, it's a very humbling experience and one that you take great pride in, but also knowing it's an important job and trying to ensure that the nation is safe and we are the first line of defense for the country. The other jobs that I had were teaching was another experience that I had that was very rewarding. I had never been a teacher before, so I always had respect for teachers, but developed a newfound respect for them, the way that they have to prepare and be able to answer questions. And working at the Pentagon for 2 years with the military was also a great experience. Met many fine officers who served there in various capacities and thoroughly enjoyed that assignment. And the education was a big thing for the agency, too, and I was fortunate enough that they paid for me to get a master's in business administration at George Washington University and met many wonderful people there as well and had a great experience in that program. And one of my professors, as a side note here, was James Bailey, who's a classmate of ours.
Right.
He taught, and I believe still teaches at George Washington University. So that was fun. I'm not sure what the odds are of two people from Galesburg ending up in that situation, but in our case, they were pretty good.
Yeah, just like the odds of somebody interviewing you today's former classmate. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
In a small world.
So. Yeah. Is there an average career length for somebody in the CIA? I mean, 29 years is long in any position, but is that considered long for the CIA, or how does that?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not certain. I mean, there were many people there who made it a career and ended up staying for 30 and sometimes even more than 30 years. Then now there are other people who decide for whatever reason that they want to try something different. So I'm not sure what an average length of a career would be. I knew when I started there that would be what I wanted to do for my entire career, especially given the fact that I could move to different occupations, different positions, and still work for the same organization. So I'm not sure. That's a good question, though.
Okay. So most of us can't imagine being in the CIA. How does that affect your daily life, even when you're not at work? I would imagine, that's really a 24/7 job, at least mentally.
I would agree with that. It can be 24/7, something that you think about all the time. But one of the things that I always focused on and was very fortunate, and many of the supervisors and managers did, and when I became a supervisor and manager, was the importance of having work-life balance. It's something that I think makes a better whole person. It really makes a better worker as well. I mean, you have to have downtime. You have to be able to have other outside interests. And so I was, you know, very fortunate in many of the assignments I had. I, you know, had enough time to certainly spend time with my family. It was important to me to spend time with my wife and our son, especially, you know, growing up in his formative years. And as one example of that, I coached his youth basketball recreation team for from when he was in third grade all the way through his senior year of high school. So that was something that was important to me, to be able to do that type of thing. You know, we took the usual vacations, that type of thing. But there were very few times that I was in a position where I didn't have to think about, you know, things 24/7. And sometimes I was on a call 24/7, which could be difficult to have to go in, you know, after hours or on the weekends. But that was just kind of the cost of doing business, if you will, of working there.
Right. You kind of mentioned this, but how did being in the CIA affect your family life? I mean, was it difficult to keep? I mean, obviously, you wouldn't have even gotten in if they didn't think that you could, you know, be confidential on information. How did that affect your family life?
Yeah, I mean, it was a little bit tough in the beginning. My wife is from that area, a suburb of Washington, D.C., so she knew of the agency and knew people that had worked there, so she kind of knew that there would be certain things I wouldn't be able to talk about. So we kind of tried to keep that aside, and we did successfully. So it wasn't too bad. There were times when I had to travel, overseas, and there were certain instances I didn't know how long I would be gone, or, you know, I wasn't sure how often I'd be able to contact her. So, she put up with that for all those years, and I'm forever grateful and thankful for that. So, and the same thing with our son too. And it was a little bit difficult at times, fortunately, they have a bring your child to work day annually, so I was able to bring him there. You know, at least you can see the building and have lunch in the cafeteria, that type of thing. So, yeah,
quite an experience for him.
So, yeah,
yeah. So, you know, it's no secret we live in a world that loves conspiracy theories. What are some common misconceptions about the CIA?
I think a lot of them are that, you know, all CIA officers are spooks or, you know, spies.
Uh-huh.
Everybody carries a gun, you know. So, I mean, I would think one thing I would say is that, you know, it's not like a lot of the movies or television shows. You know, it's not like Jack Ryan, you know, to talk about a current show that's actually out now that I've been watching. It's funny to watch. I chuckle when I watch the shows, and, you know, how much of it is so unrealistic.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, it's just, of course, they have to do that. But there were other TV shows that were on, maybe a decade or so ago, The Agency, and shows like that that, you know, tried to portray some realistic aspects of it. But of course, they had to kind of jazz it up to make it worthy of being, in the movies or on TV.
Yeah,
you know, the Hollywood effect, I guess you could call it. Yeah.
So, does the CIA ever leave you, even after you retire? I mean, is it hard to break away from that? Are you, you know, still thinking about it, or how does that work when you retire?
Yeah, I really don't think about it that much anymore. I mean, there are certain times when I think about, you know, world events that I'll think about, oh, I wonder what's going on here, but, you know, then it kind of fades away. But you know, there's still kind of restrictions on things we can and can't do. You know, get approval for media appearances. If I were to publish an article or a book or something, I'd have to have that approved ahead of time. But it's not that onerous, really. I mean, it's again, I guess, another one of the costs of having work there. But you know, I have a lot of people I know that still work there, and a lot of people that I know that are retired now, and you know, everybody's kind of in the same situation. So it's not that bad, really. I do think about it occasionally, but especially not being in that area anymore, it's not as often as if I were still probably working there, or certainly working there, but as if I were still living there.
Have you ever thought about continuing to be like a analyst or a guest expert? You know, we see a lot on cable news of experts coming on to talk about certain things. Have you ever thought about that?
I thought about it maybe for a very quick second or so, but it's just, I don't think I have the necessary expertise or depth in any particular subject to be, you know, an expert that could comment on a certain area. But, and more power to the people that are doing it. You know, I'm grateful for the insights that they provide. But that's not something I really was interested in. I mean, when I retired, I really wanted to retire and do some of the things that I had always kind of dreamt about and not had the time to do. So and part of that was moving out of the area, you know, to a much lower cost area, much slower pace of life kind of thing. So, that was one thing that really didn't appeal to me too much. So a good question.
Okay. We'll wrap up the CIA portion of our conversation here. Let's go back to the beginning. What are your early memories of growing up in Gillsburg?
Well, I don't know. The childhood then was a much simpler time, I think. There was no social media. There was no cell phones, none of that. So I mean, my earliest memories were of, you know, playing with neighborhood kids. We played a lot of baseball with neighbors and, you know, basketball, all different sports. Growing up, played in Little League Baseball for, I guess, from age of 9 through age of 12, and thoroughly enjoyed that. It was on the same team as my twin brother, Patrick, so that was always a lot of fun. I worked a lot of different part-time jobs as well. I delivered newspapers for a while, served as a busboy at the old Holiday Inn, and also the Club 19.
Mm-hmm.
And worked in the concession stand at Lake Lawn, at least for one summer that I remember. And as you mentioned, you know, I think previously we did a lot of work with the Register Mail as a sports writer there, and that was still probably one of the best jobs I ever had. You know, being able to go to sporting events and get paid to cover, you know, local high school football and basketball games, and then write a story that appeared in newsprint. So. So that was always fun. As far as education, I was fortunate enough to go to Costa Catholic School back then, Costa Catholic Academy now, and that was, you know, during the formative years, and was fortunate to have some really great teachers and experiences there, and, you know, many lifelong friends. It was a small school. I think we had 60 students in our class, so. Pretty small, and I know it's smaller now, but, we did all the different sports there. It was football, basketball. We didn't have baseball, so we did track at Costa, and, we were small but mighty, I would say. We're not competitive with a lot of the teams in football because we had so many, we didn't have many players on our team. I think one year we had a dozen football players, so, you know, that everybody was playing pretty much every play. But basketball, we were more competitive. Track, we were certainly competitive. I know we beat Lombard and Churchill a couple of times in track, so that was kind of a highlight. But it was, you know, growing up playing sports too, I thought it was important to learn not only how to win, but I think more importantly how to lose, and, you know, kind of win with grace and lose with, you know, be able to accept that. And, you know, always taught good lifelong lessons as well. So, we were fortunate to live in Gillsburg at that time. A single parent family. I was very fortunate. Our mother was a nurse and provided for us, and, you know, very, very strong work ethic, and education was always very important in our family. So, that's, you know, the formative years were great, and I wouldn't have traded those for anything. So, I think.
So, not to interrupt you, they're talking about, yep, you know, sticking on sports for a minute. You know, obviously you and Pat were, you played a lot of sports at Costa, but then kind of excelled in cross country and track at GHS. Why were sports so important to you, do you think?
Well, I think it was always important to be in a team environment, with team activities. I think meeting a lot of different people and, you know, people that were different from you, different from others. And I think, like I said earlier, winning how to lose and learning how to win, developing humility, if you will. And, you know, we got to travel, you know, to different schools in the area, you know, especially in high school, you know, going to the Western Big Six, Quad Cities, down to Quincy, those types of things. And, you know, it was fun. I mean, I didn't make the basketball team, but, you know, along with you and Pat, served as statisticians for the basketball team. So we got to travel quite a bit, and, you know, that was a lot of fun.
It was.
I think just, you know, and, you know, staying in shape and, you know, getting involved, meeting other people too. And it was, you know, fortunate to have a lot of good coaches too growing up.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, who were some of the coaches who made an impression on you?
Yeah, I mean, at Costa, certainly Buddy Pogue. He was our eighth grade basketball coach there, and just a phenomenal person, phenomenal basketball coach, and learned a lot of good life lessons from him as well. And then, you know, he worked us really hard, and but, you know, we enjoyed it and played basketball throughout our careers at Costa. And I'd say at the high school level, you know, Evan Massey was our cross-country coach, and I know he's still the coach of the girls' basketball team and has built an amazing program there and done wonders there. And, you know, Jerry Albright was our track coach as well. And so, I mean, they coaches like that, they all had a big impact on who you are and who you become, I think, you know, imparting different lessons. And, you know, I'd say the same thing about teachers. We were fortunate, I know some of the names you'll know, is, you know, Benita and David Moore,
mm-hmm.
Who are deceased, but, you know, just wonderful people who provided many opportunities for me. Without them, I would not have ended up at Georgetown. You know, the advice and guidance that they provided was critical in my decision where to go to college. But, you know, Mike Robson, another mutual friend of ours, you know, Ann McKenzie, who's, I think, my first accounting teacher, Dave Gunderson, Miriam McNeil, and then at Costa, Sister Rosemary Powers, and Mary Norton, who still teaches at Costa. So they're all very important to me, you know, growing up in formative years of school.
So how did Pat, you and Pat end up attending Georgetown? Your time there just so happened to coincide with the heyday of Hoyas basketball, also led by Patrick Ewing. What was it like to attend Georgetown when you did?
Yeah, we were there at a really good time. well, we had visited my oldest brother and his family. I think it was my junior year of high school, and my sister-in-law took us around to some of the different schools in the area, and Georgetown was one of them. And kind of fell in love with the school and campus, and we were interviewed and fortunate enough to be accepted, and ended up going there. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was a lot of hard work. Pat and I both worked quite a bit, you know, 25 hours a week usually. But, you know, worked at an on-campus field house, taking tennis reservations and doing admin duties, but also had an internship with the U.S. Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, where I worked 5 hours per day. And that was an awesome experience too. And that also got me federal government service, which is how I was able to retire a little bit earlier. I didn't have the full 30 years with the CIA. I had, I think, almost 29 years, but my time working for the Senate when I was in college actually counted towards my federal retirement. So, but as far as the basketball, that was amazing. I mean, you know, I'm a huge basketball fan, and being there when Patrick Ewing was there was, you know, was amazing. And he led the team to 3 Final Fours. And fortunately, I was able to go to all 3 of those. And they lost to New Orleans the year that Michael Jordan made the final shot. North Carolina beat them. But then Georgetown beat Houston and Seattle 2 years later. And then lost to Villanova in probably one of the most heartbreaking games I've ever been to in Lexington, Kentucky. So, but it was a lot of fun to go to the games, and, you know, very exciting. We felt very fortunate to be at Georgetown during its heyday of basketball. So.
Okay. So we mentioned that you're now retired in South Carolina. What are you doing in retirement? I hear you're ready to make a bid for the senior PGA Tour.
There you go. Yeah, right. Yeah, I think that probably have to wait a few more years.
Okay. A little more practice, huh?
Yeah, a little more practice. But I love golf. I never thought I would. I had only played it maybe a handful of times growing up and through the years. And then when I moved down here, a couple of neighbors got me interested in it, and I kind of became hooked, addicted, whatever you want to call it. And especially once COVID hit, and I guess about a year after we'd moved down here, there were very few things that we could do, and golf was one of them. So I ended up starting to play pretty much every day, and kind of became a running joke that, you know, I'd get the first tee time and play with neighbors, friends, because you could do it, and you were socially distant and all that thing. So so I continued to golf, and I pre-COVID I was doing quite a bit of volunteering with a couple of organizations down here. One was Junior Achievement, and they do a lot of teaching of workforce readiness and other life skills, including kind of financial literacy for K through 12 students. And I worked as a volunteer sports writer for an online newspaper, and that kind of dried up, and I think it's coming back again starting this fall, so I'm excited about that. And also took some classes, things that I had wanted to do for quite a while. They were at a local university, Furman University, has one of the chapters for a nationwide program for senior citizens that want to take courses that are for credit. You know, there's no grades or anything like that. It's just all more for fun and enrichment. So we have a very nice group of friends, neighbors, especially down here. So we're very fortunate, very close-knit with them. So our son moved down here as well. So we're fortunate with that. He works for a bank, and he works 100% remotely. So we get to see him pretty much weekly. So we're very fortunate in that way.
Well, that's great. So I told you this would go fast, but that wraps up our conversation today. It was fascinating to get kind of a feel, a flavor of what it's like to work for the world's premier foreign intelligence agency. So, Mike, thank you for joining me today on Galesburg Live.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and enjoyed it.
And that's my conversation with Galesburg native Mike Tatey, who was gracious enough to share some insight about his career in the CIA. If you missed some of the interview, it's available for replay on WGIL.com. In the second hour of Galesburg Live, I talked with Kilt Wilcox, CC Wilcox, and Sam Fisk of Cherry Street Brewing Company. There are some exciting changes going on at Cherry Street, and we'll learn all about them when Galesburg Live continues on 93.7 FM, 1400 AM, WGIL.